Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Joining us in the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline, Mike Guentzel, seen a lot in his hockey life. And this week you see the Gophers playing the Frozen Four, Minnesota State Mankato, and the last time the Gophers won it, he was on the staff. Xcel Energy Center, they won it the next year with Thomas Vanek, and he scouts for the NHL, and oh yeah, he's got a son that plays for the Pittsburgh Penguins that scored a big goal against the Wild last week as well. Mike, were you at that game?
Yes, I was, Mike. That was a lot of fun.
Do you get nervous still after, you know, he's done so much, he's been a part of it for so long, do you get nervous watching him?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you're always a little uptight and animated during the game. I mean, you certainly, when you come back into this environment here and the way it's going at the X with the Wild, the big crowd and everything, and, you know, it was just kind of neat to see a lot of people walking outside with his jersey on before the game. But it was, you know, you certainly hope he plays well, and that's where the anxiety kind of lays, is that you just wanted to do well. And, you know, obviously, yeah, scoring a goal was icing on the cake.
What's it feel like when he gets one, when you know all of a sudden you go, oh my, a play develops and you realize it was him?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I go to so many games now and I sit in the press box and I watch a lot of good players. And, you know, then when you just kind of always compare, like, I mean, geez, I can't believe Jake's doing this, or I can't believe he's playing in this environment. Mm. And then he scores in that game like that. And, you know, I've seen the Wild play a lot of good home games this year, a lot of good players coming and going. And just to be able to see him score against a quality team like that, we were sitting in the second deck there, in the suite level, and it was really kind of neat. I mean, Jake had a group there, so it was fun, and, you know, everybody was really excited. And I knew he would play hard and play well. He just never expected to go that well. But the last couple times he's been here, he's been able to score, and hopefully in the future he can come back in here and kind of do the same thing.
Okay, you know, I hear how popular he is in Pittsburgh with the fans, and a fan favorite, which is a surprise to no one, I don't think. But what does that feel like when you're in Pittsburgh and you're just a fly on the wall and you know, people don't know you're his parent?
You know, I don't think you're ever going to get used to it. Like I said, I mean, just seeing the amount of people that walk in with jerseys here in the Twin Cities, let alone when you go to Pittsburgh. I mean, you're always going to see 87, 71, and 58. But I think, mm-hmm. you know, 59 is right in there with, you know, the popularity of the jerseys. And, you know, it's just something you never really expect. I mean, I still can't believe he played a game in the NHL, let alone had some of the success he's had. So, you know, you try to, you know, keep him grounded. I know he's a humble guy, but, you know, it's certainly him for he's excited. And it just amazes me every time I go out to Pittsburgh to see the amount of support that he gets and the enthusiasm he generates at a game.
Mike Guentzel, you are a scout in the NHL. Tell me about the Minnesota Wild when you watch them play. What do you see?
Well, I mean, listen, you could talk about the new terms in hockey. I mean, obviously, they're a big, strong team, but they're really a heavy team. I mean, they just grind and battle, and, you know, that one line with 14, 17, and 18 set the tone for them, and, you know, they just push the puck down below the hash marks, and they get after defensemen, and, you know, they score a lot of greasy garbage goals around the net just with the second and third efforts, and, you know, they're a hard team to play against. They have a really good decor that's physical, and they can move, and, you know, they're getting quality goaltending now. I think, you know, obviously Fleury's, you know, made the other guy level, bring his level up, and they're pushing each other. So, you know, you look at it. I mean, I said to my wife the other day, I mean, we were able to get 2 points that night, and now I'm going to be a huge Wild fan on the weekend as they go to Carolina and Washington. And lo and behold, they sweep 4 points against teams that Pittsburgh's battling for with positions in their division. So they're a great team. I mean, what is their record here? The last 15 games is pretty darn remarkable. Yeah. They've made some good changes to their team, and they're just, you know what, they're a quality team, and Kaprizov is just at a different level, and he's elevated Zuccarello. And, you know, I always maybe say to, you know, certain people, I mean, there's not a lot of guys that get you out of your seat, even when you're a scout at the game, but when 97 picks up the puck, you'd start to rise and think something really good's going to happen any moment, and it usually does.
Is the fact that he's so strong in his lower body, does that make him a nightmare to play against, because you can't just take him out of his game, because he's more than willing to muck it up?
Yeah, he's got great balance, great edge control. He's a powerful guy. I mean, he's got a low center of gravity. And, I mean, last night there was a perfect example behind the net. He just took contact. The contact doesn't bother him. Matter of fact, it kind of opens up space for him. And then he has such great vision that anybody in the offensive zone on his team is dangerous at any moment, because he just makes highlight plays. And, you know, he's a dual threat. He can score and he can beat you with a pass. So, I mean, you have to be on your toes at all time. And, you know, when he and Zuccarello get it going, boy, that puck isn't on each other's stick very long, and it's on the other guy's stick in a heartbeat, and something good really happens off of that. So he's a special player, there's no doubt about it, and it's just a blend of skill and power, and just, you know, he's got speed, so he's got a lot of the qualities you like in a player like that.
Mike Gensel is our guest, NHL scout right now for Arizona, so he sees a lot of these different teams and players, etc. But Marc-Andre Fleury you're also connected to, because there's Billy Guerin and the Pittsburgh connection, of course, so you're very familiar with his game. What did you think when they acquired him, and what have you seen?
Well, listen, I mean, I read that he wasn't having a very good year in Chicago, but, I mean, listen, Chicago wouldn't be anywhere near where they're at without Fleury, and that wasn't, you know, they weren't obviously a really strong team, but they wouldn't even have been close to the points they'd acquire without the level of play. I don't see much drop-off in his game, even though he's 37. I mean, he's got an ability, as the great players do, to bring his level up, but he also elevates the players around him. I mean, just look at the comments that have come out of the locker room since he's been there, whether it's, you know, how excited they are, or the awe of the, you know, having him on the team, and, you know, how he's just, you know, his practice habits, his game habits. I mean, I watched him the other night after the Pittsburgh game. I mean, almost everybody left on the ice after warm-up, and he's taking breakaways from Kaprizov and Zuccarello, which you've never seen in an NHL game, and it's competition between the three of them. And, you know, that's what he does. He just elevates players. I mean, Jake was fortunate enough in 2017 to play with him. I mean, he got called into the first-round game 5 minutes before the start, when the starter went down with an injury in a warm-up, and, you know, he won 2.5 series for the Penguins and put him in a position to go back-to-back, and that's just the kind of level of competitor he is, and he's just a special human and a special goalie.
So when you're scouting a player like that and you're trying to decide whether or not your organization should trade for him, does the fact that he was willing to waive the no-trade clause, even though he's made all the money he needs to make and all that stuff, does that tell you a lot about him? Because that tells you got somebody where winning's more important than anything, because he didn't have to take a trade. He could have just stayed in Chicago.
Yeah, and I think what it says about the Wild is he really looked at the Wild. I know he was there 3-4 days beforehand, sitting on the bench as a backup on a Saturday afternoon, but took a look around from what I read and saw, and said, you know what, this team, this environment, you know, this is what a Stanley Cup contender looks like. And obviously Bill did a good job of, you know, being a former teammate of his and an executive of his, of selling him on the opportunity with the Wild. But I don't think he comes unless he legitimately thinks the Wild have a chance to do well in the Western Conference and advance past that. So I think he looked at the opportunity and said, this is probably something I can't pass up at this point in my career. It's another chance to, you know, put another ring on my finger potentially.
Michael, you've watched a lot of playoff hockey, too, the last several years with your son participating, and always with an eye of a scout as well. How does it change once you get to the playoffs? What's the biggest change from regular season to playoffs?
Well, I think, you know, there's, you know, first of all, every inch of the ice is more competitive. It's competed harder for than any point in the regular season. I mean, certainly guys know what's at stake. There's a lot of guys that want to have a chance to raise that cup over their head. So every loose puck battle is, you know, is ferociously competed for like nobody does in the regular season. And you can't play like that for 82 games over 6.5-7 months. But in a 2-month run, you know, that's what the cup means to a lot of players. And they just compete for every inch of ice and every puck and, you know, every free space in front of a net and, you know, every physical contact to try to battle in the war of attrition to wear somebody down over a potential 7-game series. So it's a special sport at a special time, and you can see it even now with 10, 12 games to go with playoff positions on the line and these teams playing each other in their divisions, knowing that the potential matchups might be there in the first round. And, you know, they're trying to set the tone right now. I know the Penguins have a game on Thursday night in New York, and, you know, that's a potential first-round matchup, but it's the last game before they potentially meet. And you're going to, you know, you might want to send some messages and certainly establish, you know, your confidence and your belief that your game is better than their game. And, you know, what way better to do it than do it with 10 games to go and then fine-tune coming into the playoffs?
When I watch that trade deadline, I start to see people get moved. I always think this. I think, how do you know as an organization when it's time to move someone? Is there a certain age you feel like when guys get to a point where you go, yeah, it ain't going to happen, or you categorically say, you know what, they're just going to be a third liner? Is there an age where you say, hey, if they ain't there yet, they ain't going to get there?
Well, you know what, a lot of it being in the room now, like I have the last couple of years, Mike, I mean, every team is different. I mean, they're at different levels. You certainly have teams, like, I look at teams in my region. I mean, there's teams that are rebuilding, there's teams that are legitimate contenders, and there's teams that have Stanley Cup aspirations. So there's maybe 3 or 4 different levels, and if you're the Stanley Cup contenders, you're going to add pieces that, you know, either create depth in your lineup or fill up, you know, maybe a face-off specialist or a penalty kill type of specialist situation. I don't think you're going to acquire a lot of top two line players, but you're going to fill out the depth of your lineup. If you're a rebuilding team, I mean, you might move some assets to look to the future and get some amateur picks or a young prospect that just hasn't had the opportunity on a contender because he's just, you know, they're built to win now type of deal. And so it's different for everybody, but I do think there's an age level where, you know, you have to balance between the level of experience of a 37-year-old who's won 3 Stanley Cups or a guy maybe who's, you know, in his early 30s, it might be on the decline at some point, and, you know, you might sell high as opposed to getting stuck a year or two from later and the value is not quite there. So there's a few things that go into it.
Michael, the Gophers are in the Frozen Four. They'll play Minnesota State, Mankato, Michigan sitting out there, DU. What's it been, 20 years since the Gophers, when you won it at the X? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was, you know what, we're having a reunion again this summer, and yeah, it's been a long time, 02, 03. I mean, it's just crazy how fast it goes.
Because it doesn't seem like that long ago. But what do you remember, you know, obviously the Gophers have had a lot of good teams, lots of teams do. What's the difference between winning it and losing it when you get to the Frozen Four when everybody seems like they're so close?
Yeah, you know what, it's interesting. Something years you think you're built to win it. I know that we won it back-to-back, and we actually thought the next year when guys came back with Nate Schmidt and Bukestad and some of these guys that we were going to have a better team. And, you know, it just didn't work out. I mean, whether it's a balance or whether it's, you know, maybe that little extra edge that, you know, you've already got to the mountain as opposed to keep climbing to get to the top to see what's at the top. I mean, there's a lot of little factors involved. I mean, I watched a few minutes of the regionals, and you could certainly see that everybody is very close. You know, Michigan obviously looks like they have a little more skill. I think the Gophers are in that category, but teams defend hard. They all have good goaltending. I think the coaching nowadays is a little bit more equal across the board, just with your experience and, you know, the way the game is being played. And then some of it's the way the game is being officiated too. Like if you have a good power play and all of a sudden you get 1 or 2 extra opportunities, things work out. But it ought to be interesting. I mean, it's kind of neat that 2 Minnesota schools will go at it. And then, you know, 2 teams like Denver and Michigan will play. And, you know, certainly it's going to be a really contested Frozen Four. I think, you know, probably right at this point, 4 teams that are playing really well that are there. And not just because they won the region, but I think they've had good years and they've trended well here the last month and a half, which you normally have to do. I don't think you just all of a sudden rise up and play, you know, 2 good games and win the whole thing. You got to have a pretty good team top to bottom and do it over a course of time.
Dryden McKay's got like 30 shutouts or whatever in his career from Minnesota State Mankato, their goalie. And I was asking somebody, I don't remember who, if he's NHL prospect. And they said, he might be too short. Why are we so hell-bent right now on a goalie you have to be? It's almost like basketball. If you're not 6'2", forget it.
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike, and it does happen. I mean, certainly I am a father of a son who's under 6 feet, and people say he's too small, too slow, too this, too weak, you know, whatever it may be. The goaltending thing, I mean, there's a lot of old-school mindset that you have to be the cookie-cutter size of 6'1 to 6'3, and, you know, 6 feet is too small and 6'5 is too big. I mean, but I do think the game, unfortunately, is going back to, you know, bigger, stronger guys. You hear, I mean, a lot of people talking about having big, strong, heavy players nowadays, and just because it makes it so difficult to get to the net and protect your net. And so it's frustrating. I mean, a kid like that has proved himself with a good coaching staff, a good program, and he's done it over the course of time. This isn't just a one-year blip. I mean, he's been really good for 4 years, and it's crazy that he's even back based on what he did in 3 years. It's almost crazy that he's back for a fourth year. But, you know, people look at it and say, you know, maybe he doesn't have this quality, or maybe he's a product of the environment. I don't know. I don't see as many college games, but it is incredible that, you know, people in their own minds think that the net coverage of a guy who's 6 feet or under isn't what it needs to be, and the shooters are too good at the NHL level. But, you know, it's a fine line. I see guys that, you know, people say can't play in the NHL, and all of a sudden I turn on the game tonight or yesterday and guys are playing in the NHL. I mean, it's about the opportunity, and it's about the belief that somebody has in you. And, you know, certainly giving a guy a chance to compete in a successful environment that's, you know, well-structured. So, we traded for a kid from Mankato, and, you know, this Nathan Smith, and certainly hopefully he does well in the Frozen Four. But, you know, everybody's always worried about, you know, one thing or the other. And to me, you know, it comes down to the kid's character and his heart and, you know, certainly his hockey sense and being able to process the game, because you can always be a little quicker if you're smarter. And, you know, those are the important intangibles more so than, you know, what a guy looks like on the height and weight scale.
Yeah, last question along those lines. I was down in spring training, and I was visiting with Rod Carew a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about, you're an old baseball player too, Mike, the tendency the same way. You know, you got to, if you're going to hit home runs, it's a lot easier to hit home runs if you're 6'3", 220 than it is if you're 5'10", 175. And Rod made an interesting point that I hadn't thought of. He was very concerned about that being the trend in baseball, because he said every kid needs to dream that they can play. And if we start to tell them that now in baseball too, the last bastion, the last, you know, the last place where you could be small and still be successful, maybe soccer too, if we start to tell them they've got to be bigger, you know, linebacker size to play, we're going to eliminate the dreams and those kids that learn how to play the game the right way and hit the ball the other way, and they're going to quit playing baseball because they're going to say, what's the use? I'm not 6'3", I'm not 6'4", I can't even play second base at this size. That is a little bit, I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but there is a rippling effect across the board, isn't there?
There's no question. I mean, and that's always the concern. I mean, you do get, you know, certain kids get frustrated. Maybe they drop out of it or give it up. And, you know, that's hard to overcome at times. And that's what I hope doesn't happen. I mean, I love to see kids play multiple sports. And you see so much more now, kids just playing one sport and throwing everything in that one basket. And, you know, hopefully they get an opportunity. But you can see that, you know, with what he's saying, that, you know, dreams are being crushed and opportunities are being taken away from guys. I mean, it's amazing. I do watch baseball, even spring training games, you know, relentlessly, because there's sports on TV and it's fun to watch for me personally. But, you know, it's just like the difference now of seeing a shortstop or a second baseman compared to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, the size of these guys.
Yeah, Carlos Correa, you know.
You know, just the game in general, three infielders on one side, and, you know, guys not being able to hit the ball the other way, and guys just having pull happy, you know, mindsets that, you know, it's home run or nothing. I mean, as a fan, actually, it makes it hard to watch the game, quite honestly, because I like to see runs, I like to see strategy, I like to see people moving runners around. I mean, my dad was a baseball coach, and I was a bad boy for a long time, and that's how I learned the game. And, you know, you learn the fundamentals and the inside and outs of the game. And to me, that's kind of going away. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the size of the kids and, you know, the different types of things that are going on now with the training and everything that goes into it. It's different now, and it's kind of frustrating because there is a lot of people. I mean, certainly in hockey, usually you see some of the smarter players and the quicker players are a little bit of the smaller players, but they've had to be, you know, they had to overcome some of the obstacles of size and, you know, some of the, you know, how the level is being, you know, developed and coached. But it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully you can still have some of the purity of just having smart players and athletic kids. And no matter what their size is, still be able to accomplish good things.
That's right. Marble Mallards would bunt him over, and then they'd let Jim Stoll knock it in even late in his career. So it was a different time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then he'd go out and pitch the ninth inning. And
yeah,
go one,
and he
two,
just
three,
passed
and
away
go.
A couple of weeks ago, too. One of the
yeah, I know. My dad talks about him. Yeah, it's kind of sad, you know. I mean, you just see guys like that. I remember playing for him one day, and I'm playing second base in Marble one night, and he's managing the team, and he keeps telling me to back up, and I'm at second base, and I don't think my arm is that strong, and I'm like, I got to keep both feet in the deep dirt. Mm-hmm. He's telling me, no, I'll take 2, 3, 4, 5 steps back, cut off more holes, and I'm like, man, that's a long throw. But I mean, these guys know the game, and you know, this is just the way it is. But it's fun. I mean,
yeah, those are good memories. Like, absolutely.
Oh, they are good memories. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. You know, I might even come out of retirement and play another summer. We'll see.
Yeah, well,
and I'll let you go, though. But, Michael, thank you so much. Always fun to cover a few different topics with you.
Okay, Maxie. Always great to talk with you. All the best.
We'll do it again soon. Mike Gensel. There you go. That's covering ground at every level because he can cover ground at every level. Take a break. Come back. Sports to the Max. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. When we come back, it's a little bit more sobering. Another star athlete gunned down, killed in St. Paul. Don't know if he was what he was a part of or what went into it, but it was a sad, sad story that resonated last week, certainly over there, but beyond. And when we come back, we'll visit with Brian Sandifer. He's seen many, many that he has coached and seen, and he knew this young man very well, and the streets claim them. Why does it keep happening? Why? We'll ask him that when we come back. Stay with us on Sports to the Max. Brian Sandifer is very involved in St. Paul, a number of different things, School for Recording Arts, Sizzle basketball program, and much more. And he hurts when somebody from the family is taken from them, so to speak. And they've had many, many over the years lives lost to gang violence, gun violence, and things like that. People that he's coached, people that he knew, people that he's given second chances to. It happened again last week with a young man from St. Paul Central, Dion Ford. Brian joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Brian, always good to visit with you. Tough when it's extenuating circumstances. And I watched last week and listened, and I ran to Larry Suggs at the Women's Final Four, and he was grieving, and we were talking about it. We see these, and they become a statistic to us, and we may even see some video and some family members that cry or mourn the loss. You know them as people. Just give me the profile of this young man that looked like he had at least great athletic potential in Dion Ford. Who was he, and how did it strike you?
Dion Ford was a ball of energy, just a smile. I have to call him Jimmy Carter sometimes because every time you see him, you see all his teeth. You know, he was always full of positive energy. He was a kid that come from, you know, limited resources. Mom did the best job she could to help raise him. She did a good job, you know, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, when a kid like Dion, you know, Larry Suggs, myself, Carl West, who's like a brother to me, who's a mentor to him, his son Kai West, were good friends growing up. We're kind of like the big, you know, big brother mentor figure to him. And, you know, he was a guy that we were, especially myself and Larry, when it came to basketball, were two guys that he leaned on heavily when it come to his basketball career and always, you know, wanted to have it out. You know, if we ever had opportunities for him to play, he would play with us. He would go out of town with us. We make sure he was okay. One particular incident stands out with him about me. You know, I talked about it, that stands out the most was when he was in ninth grade. He's going to ninth grade. He told me he's always going to play with Sizzle. And he got to tryouts, he ran up to the coach. I told you I was going to be here. We came to tryouts. He did really good. He made our top team at that time. You know, had like Caden Johnson, Terry Lockett. They had a really, really good team. And we had to go to Milwaukee for a tournament.
Yep.
And Deion said, Coach, I don't have my whole team fee, but $200 is all I got.
Yeah.
I said, no problem. He gave Larry and myself $200. We get to the gym. Deion was like, we're ready to play. In an hour, Deion didn't have any tennis shoes to wear for the tournament.
Huh.
So Larry yells me right into his beat. He says, Brian, please give Jalen's mother, Molly, some money to get Deion a pair of shoes. So we just gave him back his money. Hmm. and got him a pair of shoes, and that story stood out to me on what type of a kid he was, that he was going to give his last $200 that he had, play basketball, and have a pair of shoes.
So yep.
That's a tough one when I think about him.
What's it like when you get that call? It's not the first one that you've received where somebody that you coached or interacted with as a teacher or a coach. What's it like when somebody calls you and says, guess what happened?
Yeah, that. Yeah, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. I mean, in the last week, we lost two kids. I lost a kid. Jalen Suggs' cousin, Mike Bell, was murdered in South Minneapolis on Tuesday. And then 2 days later, Deion was murdered. So, you know, losing two kids like that I had a very close relationship with, it felt like it was a gut punch, you know, to hear that. And like I said, you know, as well as Mike Bell was, but Deion always had a special place in my heart just because, you know, I just recently was helping him. He got back into school in North Dakota School of Science, Junior College in Wapping in North Dakota, and he's playing there. And then 2 months ago, the coach, who's a good friend of mine, Stu Ingen, he's from Augsburg, told me that Deion had left campus and wasn't there any longer. So I knew when he came back home, I knew the demons were out waiting on him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was just hoping that he would have stayed because I didn't want him to come back and be in this environment that we had to deal with right now.
Well, take me to the next step. You say that, and a lot of us don't relate to it. So he's at the North Dakota School of Science, and he decides this isn't for me, and even though he's got the athletic talent. So he comes back. What happens? He comes back to what? Is there a gang waiting for him? What's waiting for him back here?
Well, I just think that he comes back to his comfort zone. I mean, a lot of his friends, you know, when you're in that environment, sometimes you're a product of your environment, even if you're not, you know, you could say you're not all the way in, but at the end of the day, boy, if you got one fit in, to me, you're all the way in, because even if you're not the guy with the crew that's doing all of the dirty work in the streets, you still have affiliation, you know. And I'm not saying that he did or he didn't. I'm just saying if you hang around with that type of environment, you're around it, I think you can be an innocent bystander and stuff like that can happen. You know, it's been talked about numerous times, innocent bystanders standing downtown in the apples or certain places. And they get, you know, they get the murder, whatever, just by crossfire, like the young lady who was murdered at that truck stop bar off West 7th Street a few months back. She was the girlfriend of one of my ex-players, and she was just in a bar, and the guys opened fire. She got hit in the crossfire, had nothing to do with it. Hmm. So even my own son goes out all the time, and I tell him, you know, stay away from downtown just because of a situation like that. He's not involved in it at all.
Usually, if kids, when we talk about them getting into the wrong thing, are most of the things that start the gun violence, is it drug related or not always?
No, I just think it's, you know, kids just fighting over, you know, you got a lot of fake tough guys, you know what I'm saying?
And it's always about respect, right?
Yeah, the quickest way to even the score is to pull a pistol out, you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I mean, you know, things happen. But, you know, there's so much more gunplay now than has been in past years. You don't really feel safe anywhere, because honestly, it can happen in Woodbury, Minnetonka, just as well as it can happen down in Minneapolis or in St. Paul. It's that prevalent right now in the community. And it's not just all black kids. It's several races that are involved in these type of hideous crimes, like the young kid, that the Hill kid that was murdered in North Minneapolis. Uh-huh. He was killed by... I believe a gentleman that was not an African-American.
Correct.
And then, you know, that kid was murdered based upon a shoulder pump. It had nothing to do with gangs or nothing like that. So, you know, I mean, it's just tight out here on these kids. It's tough.
You know, you work with and you get a chance to speak to a lot of different kids in your summer basketball program. And what do you tell them? What do you tell them about where to hang out, what to do, especially right now in this point? Do you tell them there are certain places that you just can't go, or what do you tell them?
I just tell them, you know, at the end of the day, this life is full of choices. You can talk to these kids till you're blue in the face. There are several kids in my program and several kids that I talk to all the time on a regular basis. But at the end of the day, I know when they leave me, a lot of them, I know I might not never see them again. And he's one of them, you know. I just had made a post on Twitter probably about 2 weeks ago, and Deion made a comment like, what's up, coach?
Yeah.
Blah, 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 or whatever. And that's the last contact I had with him, but it was a positive interaction, you know, and, to be honest with you, Deion's a kid, honestly, that he's one of the last kids that I would expect to hear that did that, was involved in that situation, you know. So that's why, for me, it's very gut-wrenching, and it's usually, you know, they try to say it's black-on-black crime, but I don't believe that. I believe that it's white, black, native, you name it. I mean, there's so much crazy stuff going on in today's society. I don't believe that it's just only in the inner city. There's a lot of stuff where one of my ex players got murdered in Woodbury about 5 months ago in a suburban cul-de-sac. So it's choices that kids make, but at the end of the day, I don't feel like there's no safe haven no more in the communities like it has been in years past.
Do you feel like, do you know of the kids that you work with when they get to be 17, 18, do you know who's carrying guns, who's packing heat and that kind of stuff or not? Do they hide it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you have relationships like us with the kids, I mean, yeah, you know, man, it ain't like they run up and say, hey, coach, I got a 9mm or anything like that. But, I mean, you just know.
Yeah.
When you've been in it, up in it, and you've been around like me, you know. And, you know, a lot of them, they come to the school we go to, and they might put their pistol, you know, hidden in a bush or somewhere in a trash can. When they come out of school, a lot of them, you know, are worried about riding the light rail without the opposite gang members maybe jumping on them or open fire on them. So they're in survival mode, a lot of these kids, and that's all they know. They don't have a lot of positive male figures at home waiting on them. A lot of them are being raised by single moms, and that single mom's white or black. And really, to me, that's a lot of it, is there's not a lot of positive male figures in the household with these young men, and that's part of the reason why so much of this is going on.
Now, on a positive note, I was at watching you guys run your workout a couple of weeks ago in Woodbury, and Sizzle opened it up, and I think that what I heard was they expected 200 kids to show up for an open tryout for basketball, and instead 400 showed up. How do you explain that?
I mean, I think it's just, you know, when you put the grind, the type of time that Larry Suggs, myself, Quincy Caldwell, Aisha Phillips, who does administrative assistant for me, we put so much time and energy. You know, my dad started with me 20-some years ago. You know, they're only you in life. You only, you know, if you're lucky enough, you're only hot so many times. Michael Jackson was hot. Michael Jordan, Howard Pulley was hot for a long time. D1 Minnesota was hot. I think this is just our time right now. I just think, you know, what stuff we got going on, kids, we're very, very prevalent in social media. We always are posting stuff positive about our kids. No matter whether it's football, baseball, basketball, girls or whatever, alumni, and the kids, I think statewide, nationally, watch Sizzle. We've been fortunate enough to have the type of stage to have kids like Jalen Suggs, Chet Holmgren, and Prince Olegbe, where we played on ESPN during the pandemic, when we were the only high school team in Minnesota that was playing on a major stage on ESPN during the pandemic, where we played against some of the top-rated players in the country. And those kids watch that. They follow us. I think every time we do something like the fact we had Brady Carrington who won Mr. Basketball last week. Three in a row Mr. Basketballs, you know, Jalen Suggs, Chet Holmgren, and now Brady Carrington. All kids watch that. You know, so when they watch that, you know, and obviously on the girls' side, we got several girls playing Division I. You know, my daughter plays D2 volleyball, was in our program. There's a ton of them that that are following us on social media. You know, Jalen and those guys have damn near a million followers. So everybody knows that him and Chet and Prince and a lot of other guys, we got Chase Carter, you know, and then the fact we got several ex-Gophers and ex-pros that coach in our program, Randy Carter, McDonald, different guys like that. So it's just a following I think we have. And my sister and my mom do a lot of marketing stuff with their own individual circle at my churches and stuff like that. Aisha Phillips does a ton in our administrative side of marketing, with our webpage and different things, our social media pages. And right now, let's be honest, social media, if there was social media 20 years ago, those programs might have been still at the highest level. We would be still kind of at the bottom. But I think our social media presence is so high. And then this year coming up again, Chet Holmgren is probably going to be the number one pick in the draft. You got him, Jalen. We're the only program in the state to ever have back-to-back top five picks, let alone in the country. So all that stuff is what kids watch, and we're just blessed to be a part of it.
Brian, thank you for talking to us as always. We'll do it again soon. Stay well. Get that back fixed, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Brian Sanifer, nice enough to join us at News Talk 830 WCCO. I heard of another incident today, and it's so disturbing and it's so repetitive that I don't know if you can separate them. But I'll share with you something that I heard that happened last week in downtown Minneapolis. And I'm scratching my head saying, you got to be kidding me. I'll tell you what it was next. Welcome back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. Timberwolves tomorrow night against Washington. Twins tentative for Thursday in the opener. We've got it all covered. So I went over to a restaurant today in downtown Minneapolis, and they told me the story about what happened last Thursday night. And I go, what do you mean what happened last Thursday night? That would have been the eve, by the way, of the Final Four women's tournament, the night before it, and not that far removed from where many people stayed while they were here. They said five people came in. One had a pipe. One had a gun. They hit people. They pepper sprayed people. They did whatever they wanted to people. They assaulted them. And they said, and then we called the police, and we couldn't get a police officer here for 30 minutes. Long after they had done their damage. That was in downtown Minneapolis, not far from where people were staying during the Final Four. I don't know if any of them were in the restaurant at that time or not, but it sounded like an incredibly scary situation. And as Brian Sandifer pointed out there, I mean, when is it going to get better? When are we going to trend and make this thing better than what it was? I mean, as I talked to the manager of that restaurant, and she told me in detail, graphic detail, what happened, I said, you can't make this up. And then she said they came back, and they banged on the windows outside with sticks as if just to say, we'll do whatever we want, whenever we want, because there's no police officer that could get there in time. We've got a depleted police force as well. And we can get angry about it. We can jump up and down. But yeah, a lot of people got a lot of different things they want to say about it, but there's not a lot of action being taken. And to think that those people are that vulnerable. How would you like to hire workers for that restaurant now? How would you like to say, hey, come work for us? And you know, did you hear about what happened last Thursday night? And this is a good, clean restaurant. I eat there often. I won't share the name with you now. Maybe I'll get somebody on from there and they can recount what happened and you can understand it. But it was not far from where I work. And it was certainly in the middle of what would have been, Final Four festivities. If people were out and about, there would have been a good chance that they could have stopped into that restaurant and been having a bite to eat the night before if they were going to go to the game the next day. And it got ugly, as I understand it. And it just scares you because you don't know when it's going to get better. But I don't think it's anytime soon. And we can sit here and pretend that, oh, it's going to, you know, we're this greatest city. We're the greatest. No, we're not. We're Minnesota, and we're not as great as we thought we were. And Minneapolis ain't as great as the city thought it was. It's just not. And the first step, as they always say, is admitting you have a problem. And there's still some people that don't understand what the problem is. They don't understand it. They don't get it. They don't see what this does. And until some of those people get it, understand it, be careful, man. Be careful where you travel. Be careful where you travel. And I feel so bad for the people that run this. They run a top-notch, great restaurant. Clean, good food, the whole bit, you know? And then you deal with all that bunch of BS. And now you got to worry about how quickly a cop can be dispensed to the scene. I guess if you live long enough, you see lots of things, don't you? I guess if you live long enough, you see lots of things that aren't so good. And then there was that shooting outside of Target Center on early Sunday morning. Now, you know, the Final Four crowd wasn't there. But that transmits and resonates, and people talk about that stuff the next day. And they keep talking about it. And every time they talk about it, now we had a whole bunch of guests in here from other parts of the country that can talk about it. That's really good, isn't it? Like I said, until you understand it, until you go down there and live it, until you talk to the people that are in this area, don't comment on it. I'll be back again Wednesday night to do a lot of commenting on a lot of different things on Sports to the Max. Henry Lake's coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.